from KQED.
This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Would you be willing to pay more at parking meters if that inflated price makes it more likely you'll find an open spot? Well, as part of a two-year-old pilot project, the San Francisco Municipal Transportation Agency has distributed smart parking meters throughout the city that can track where parking is densest and set rates accordingly. And the goal is to keep one parking spot open on each block. We're discussing the impact of the program so far and where it's headed. And we have Jay Primus with us, program manager of SF Park, a project of San Francisco Municipal Transportation Agency. And welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. Happy to be here.
Glad to have you. Also glad to have Donald Shoup, who's with us from Southern California, a fellow of the American Institute of Certified Planners and professor of urban planning at UCLA, author of The High Cost of Free Parking, and a man who has even followers who call themselves Shoupistas. Donald Shoup, glad to have you on Forum. Welcome.
Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, let me actually begin with you, if I may, and just give us kind of the broad picture of, because it's your paradigm that's being followed in San Francisco and that other cities, including Los Angeles, are looking at very seriously. The idea behind this, again, is really to track the availability of parking spots for variable parking charges and the demand of them. What kind of success have you had so far? It's been a two-year program here.
Here in San Francisco, we really got off the ground last year, and there'd been a lot of planning. And the bottom line goal is to make it so that your experience as a driver is that it's very easy to find a parking space. Not everyone drives, but when people choose to drive, we want it to be easy, and that's good for everyone if it's easy to find a space. And once you get there, easy to pay. So far, we've been using, there's two main tools, either better information, especially real-time information about where there's open spaces, as well as smart prices, and we're legally obligated to charge the lowest rate possible so that there's almost always one space available on every block.
Well, in fact, it's now down on Drum Street near the Embarcadero by the Ferry Building where those restaurants are. It's used to be $3.50, now it's $4.50. Donald Shoup, explain how this works. I mean, the technology of it and what you've envisioned here.
Well, I think it's the first time a government has stated what its goals are for the curb parking supply and their rules for setting the prices. You mentioned the price went up on Drum Street. That was taken from the New York Times article, I think.
Yeah.
But if you look at the other street that's mentioned, the price went down more than the price went up on Drum Street. So as I understand it, as many prices have gone down in San Francisco as have gone up. I think when you look at the wonderful maps that SF Park produces, you can see the declines. Even near City Hall, some of the prices are down to 25 cents an hour, where nearby blocks are more expensive. And when journalists call me and say, well, how can this happen? How will motorists know where to park? My response is, well, if the spaces are half empty, shouldn't the city reduce the price of parking? And until it almost fills up, and I think everybody understands that. So that if you should reduce the price of parking when there are a lot of empty spaces, I think you should nudge the price up when there are no empty spaces. It's fairly easy to explain, and it's hard to find another way to set the right price for curb parking without looking at the results. I think all San Francisco is doing is looking at the results and then nudging the prices up or down.
Well, as far as finding out about a space, you can call from a cell phone, smartphone. You got an app now, about 25,000 downloads, in fact, and counting from what I've read. And yet, it works better on weekdays, doesn't it, Jay Primus?
It seems to work pretty well across weekdays, weekends. Prices do vary by weekends, and they're different on weekdays versus weekends. What we're seeing, there's a pretty broad definition of success, that if spaces are between 60 and 80% full, that's about right. If they're more full and you can't find a space, that's when we raise prices 25 cents an hour, about every 6 weeks, if necessary, and that's been about 30% of the time. And if it's relatively empty or very empty, we can lower rates by 25 cents or 50 cents an hour. What we've seen so far, and it seems to be working pretty well, that 75% of the time, that we've either hit about that right rate, we've hit the right occupancy, or things are going in the right direction. Well, it's looking pretty good.
I'm going to actually invite listeners to join in and talk about how it looks to them. Many of you, I'm sure, have had some experiences with this new variable, but also what do you generally respond to when you think about this whole system being put in place? It is a model, in fact, and many cities throughout the country are looking at San Francisco and looking at how things are going here to put into place elsewhere. If you'd like to join us, in fact, let me invite you to do that now. Our toll-free number is available to you. It's 866-733-6786. What do you think about paying higher for densely places or paying less for places which aren't densely parked up? And the result is, by the way, presumably more parking places. Again, you can join us toll-free, 866-733-6786, or email us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum, click on the segment, or go to our Facebook page, a number of ways to communicate with us. And Donald Shoup, this is I suppose being looked at as a model because it's not only presumably going to make more parking spaces available, it's also going to, at least in the long run, possibly even in the short run, have an effect on pollution and on traffic?
It'll have a lot of benefits. And I think you have to compare SF Park to the alternative. And everybody I know says that parking in San Francisco is a nightmare, that you have to cruise around for half an hour to find a space, you're late for meetings, and it just ruins your life. So, I mean, that's the alternative we're talking about, that you have to compare SF Park to. And what happens when people circle the block hoping to see somebody going out is that creates traffic congestion, air pollution, waste fuel. I think all of these things will get better once you get the price of curb parking right. That if you see one or two vacant spaces on every block, you can't say that parking is a nightmare or that something ought to be done. Maybe you don't want to pay $4.50 an hour, but you can drive a few blocks farther or short of your destination and park for a lower price. And we're not talking about huge amounts of money. You mentioned in Drum Street the price went from $3.50 to $4.50 an hour. Is that really going to hurt many people? If you're willing to pay $3.50 and drive around for half an hour hoping to see a space, it's not that much worse to pay $4.50 and park right away.
Well, valet parking costs a lot more than that. And I was struck by the figure 50% as a kind of ceiling on this in terms of raising parking costs. Is that pretty much standard at this point, that it's not supposed to exceed 50%?
As I understand it, they never raise prices by more than 25 cents an hour.
Well, I just want to get sort of Jay, can you help us here? I just want to get the parameters here.
Yeah, sure. This is what we found is that if spaces, the way that occupancy, the data is averaged, is that if over a three-hour period, the average occupancy is more than 80%. It sounds low, but what that translates into as a driver experience is that that's when you start circling and getting very frustrated, not able to find a space, exactly what we're trying to avoid. So that's where we've set that the target at 80%, that ceiling, and we'll evaluate to see. We can adjust that, if need be, to better achieve our goals of reducing congestion, greenhouse gas emissions, of reducing circling and double parking.
And you've got a federal grant that's part of essentially what's contributing to this experiment. But as I understand it, you're tracking about a quarter of the metered spots, of some 26,800 metered spots?
That's right. It's about 25%, 30% of the metered spaces in the city spread across eight neighborhoods. And these are busy neighborhoods: downtown, Civic Center, Mission, Fillmore, and so on. And it was a federal grant to fund high-profile demonstrations of innovative ways to manage congestion.
Well, I couldn't find a better city in San Francisco, as Donald Shoup and you have both been intimating. Let me go to our callers, and let's bring Randy in first. Randy, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Okay.
I have a question. I'm circling in San Francisco right now looking for parking, and it's a daily frustration for me. I need a car for my work, and I have an office in the Mission area. It seems that more and more parking spaces are being taken away by the red paint that is throughout the whole city. And I don't understand that, you know, a dollar more an hour does hurt a person. I have my own business. And these areas where you're allowing 25-cent parking, obviously those parking spaces aren't being filled because there's no need for the parking there. But there are many areas of the city where parking is desperately needed, and the city keeps taking away spaces and then adding meters at high rates. It doesn't help the city. We can't survive on bicycles in this city. Vehicles need a break, too.
Jay Premise.
Yeah, in the city, there's 281,000 on-street spaces, and that's not counting garages and lots. So we really have a lot of parking, but we're trying to be smarter about how we manage it, get more value out of it, so that when people choose to drive, it's easy to find. Another key part of this are garages. In the past, it's cost more to park in the municipal garages and lots than it did on street. So we gave people every financial incentive to circle around. That's exactly what we don't want to see.
As part of
SF Park, we've been lowering the rates in the garages, so now it's cheaper. So and a place like the Mission, there's two garages there. That's a much cheaper alternative than on street.
I want to go to Seth next, and Seth is joining us from Palo Alto. Seth, you're on.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
So my general comment is that if we're raising the prices and that's reducing the number of people parking, obviously some people are not able to afford to park there. For the people making a lot of money, this isn't going to be an issue. So we're sort of biasing public parking towards those with more money. And unless it's accompanied with some sort of public transportation that is improved and makes it easier to get around, I see it really as sort of a biased piece of monetization.
What do you say about that, Donald Shoup, bias against poor people?
Well, I think SF Park will help poor people much more than the current system does. That 30% of the population in San Francisco doesn't own a car. And all of the money from SF Park goes to subsidized public transit. So the 30% of the people who don't own a car are certainly going to be better off if SF Park gets the price right, because now public transit buses are mired in congested traffic caused by people driving around and around and around hunting for a cheap curb parking space. I think that if SF Park works, there's less double parking, there are fewer cars hunting for parking and congesting traffic for buses. The buses will run faster. This will make it cheaper to operate the buses. You'll get better, more reliable service for poor people. I think that drivers sometimes push poor people out in front of them like human shields, saying don't charge for parking because it will hurt the poor, when they're really concerned that they'll may have to pay more for parking. And I think Jay Premise said very clearly that as many times parking prices have gone down as have gone up, and in the garages, as I understand it, almost every price has declined at all hours, especially during the evening. So I don't buy this idea that it's going to hurt the poor. I think that some people don't want to pay for parking. I don't want to pay for parking either, but I don't want to circle for half an hour hunting for a curb parking space. And I'd like to hear somebody say, other than looking at the results, how would you set the price for curb parking?
Again, Donald Shoup is UCLA professor of urban planning and the author of The High Cost of Free Parking. And question for you, Donald Shoup, from a listener named Joseph, who says, I don't see how this new system creates new parking spots. It seems to me that it's merely shifting the cost from drivers parked in less busy areas to drivers parked in busier areas. How is this supposed to open up spaces aside from pricing some drivers out in busier areas?
Well, I think there are a number of things that people can do in the busier areas. They can park for a shorter time, and that will open up spaces for other people. They can park at a different time of day, and that will open up more spaces at the busiest hours. Or they can park a few blocks away and walk farther to their destination if they can find a cheaper curb parking space. I think all of those things would be better for everybody. I think that it isn't as though we're just raising the prices in busy areas and nothing happens. We're raising the prices in busy areas and one or two vacant spaces or open spaces appear on every block, and you'll get a big reduction in cars circling for traffic, interfering with bicyclists and pedestrians and polluting the air in the busiest areas where there are the most pedestrians. I think when you really think through the whole issue carefully, as they have done in SF Park, I think you could have an answer to almost every objection.
Well, here's a web comment that says, this is very good news. Free parking regulations and the low cost of paid parking have subsidized drivers for too long. In places such as the Bay Area with a good public transit network, it is quite sensible to make people pay for the convenience of private transportation. Pricing parking closer to the market rate can reduce congestion, make it easier to park for those who need to, and are willing to pay the price and even help the environment. Another web comment, Jay Primus, listener says, since the pads on the street can detect a vehicle in the space and this information is uploaded through the parking meters, do meter maids have the capability to know when a vehicle is in a spot and the meter is expired and therefore go directly to the vehicle to issue a citation?
They do not. It's something we've looked at testing. But the great one of the great things about this is that we haven't just made it easy to pay with meters that take credit cards and cell phones. That's part of the equation. We've also relaxed time limits. So time limits are now either 4 hours or there's no time limit at all. What that means is that it's really easy to avoid parking tickets, and that's exactly what we've seen. Meter revenue has gone up, just simply letting people pay, finally, with credit cards at the meters. Meter revenue has gone up, but meter-related citations, parking tickets, that revenue has gone down dramatically. And that's great customer service.
I was just going to say, you're bringing a lot of data together here from the meters and the parking sensors and the citations and the transit vehicles and the sales tax. I mean, it's a heap of data.
Yeah, it's a fabulous and unprecedented data set, really putting a lot of emphasis on evaluating this as a demonstration project. That's a real responsibility that comes with the federal funding and one we've taken very seriously.
Another comment on our web, and you can put your comments on our website simply by going to kqed.org/forum and clicking on this segment. Listener writes, now that Muni is merged with DPT, creating the MTA bureaucracy, managers can throttle the parking rates up to cover Muni mismanagement, the red ink. Is there pressure from one part of MTA on parking rate setters to increase revenue?
And, you know, one of the great things about this as an approach to parking is that it's a data-driven, rules-based, transparent approach to setting parking rates. The rules that we use, the formulas for adjusting rates, are online. So is the data we use, the occupancy data. So people can go and see themselves on any particular block why we either raised rates slightly, lowered them, or left it the same.
Where do they go online?
sfpark.org/rates is where you can find both policies and the data, as well as the maps of the rate changes that Dr. Shoup mentioned.
Okay, and we'll go to D. Greg as our next caller. D. Greg, you're on.
Well, hi there. I definitely consider myself a Shoupista. I see this as a win-win because it makes drivers waste less time and be more sane, but it also improves alternatives for those of us that want to use them. But I'm curious about the environmental benefits and whether actually having a predictable, available space for money would actually cause more people to drive to congested areas, particularly if those spaces are turning over more quickly. So is there any how quickly things come, or how frequently cars come, and whether that increases with parking pricing?
Professor Shoup, can you shed some light here?
Well, I think that's a possible effect, but I think it's counterbalanced by the fact that some of the spaces will be open, and that means fewer cars will be there. I think that the major effect will be on reducing air pollution right in the busiest areas where there are most people breathing the fumes, and including the drivers who were cruising, who were driving around cursing congestion and staring at taillights and breathing exhaust, but wanting to park free when they find a space. I think I can understand, and I feel it myself, the wish that we could all park free. But I don't think that making a few open spaces and reducing all that driving around in the busiest areas will be counterbalanced by more people coming to the area.
Again, Donald Shoup
is a
professor of urban planning at UCLA, author of The High Cost of Free Parking. And let's go to more of your calls. Let's bring Philip on. Good morning, Philip.
Hi.
This is a question for Jay. First of all, I think what you guys are doing is great. I live in the peninsula, and I love San Francisco, but I hate parking in San Francisco. It's awful. I end up doing a lot of circling. So I'm a recreational San Francisco parker. I'm usually up there at night. For me, as a night parker, what's most important is the information about availability. And I've used your Android app a few times for that. And I was wondering, why is it that you only, if in fact this is true, why do you only publish kind of aggregated block data, average data about availability, instead of actually showing individual open parking spaces on the app?
Yeah, there's a couple of reasons for that. And just to let everyone know, there's an Android and an iPhone app. These are free that show in real time where parking is available, where you're more likely to find a space. And the caller's mentioning that the interface for that and the open data feed shows parking availability by block face. Every block has two block faces. That was a really deliberate and conscious decision not to show space-by-space data. And the couple reasons for that, one is that we didn't want anyone racing after a particular space. It's a behavior we wanted to avoid. Another one is just limitations of the user interface. Whether a computer screen or especially a smartphone, it's really hard to show space-by-space data. So that was just a trade-off and a balance that we struck between detail and precision and a good user interface.
Philip, we thank you for the call. And again, Jay Primus is the program manager of SF Park, a project of the San Francisco Municipal Transportation Agency. And our next caller is Ann. Good morning.
Good morning. Here's my question. If you're circling and there are no parking spaces, how in the world do they start to open up? He says, we open them up and guarantee that there will be one or two spaces on every block. How do they do that if they're already filled? How does that work?
You want to tell us how it works, Jay?
Sure. Yeah, there's no guarantee. No guarantee, but it's definitely a goal that most of the time your experience as a driver is that you find this parking space much more quickly than you do now. And the way we do that, the secret sauce is really in that demand-responsive pricing and finding the lowest rate possible so that most of the time there's an open space in every block. And this is something that we're gradually moving towards, and we should be, and this is part of the evaluation, that where people, that's generally their experience, that parking is easier to find. But, you know, there still could be a time where you won't find a place right away, right in front of your destination.
And we thank the caller and go right to another caller, and that's Nikki. You're on.
Hi, Jay. This is Nikki in the Potrero Hill area, and I was wondering how you can state all of this information about the environment when there's been no environmental impact report done. And also at a recent meeting, you stated that there were no meters starting at 25 cents an hour anywhere in the city. So I was wondering, I just wanted to make that clear that you have said that residential areas will start at 25 cents an hour when there are none that start at 25 cents an hour. And also there's quite a few of us in this mixed-use neighborhoods, PDR and UMU areas, who are getting meters in front of residences and commercial properties. And I'm wondering what you say to that. These are not retail businesses that do not want these meters.
Hey, raising a number of questions. Jay Primus.
Yeah. As far as the expected benefits of SF Park, that's the purpose of this federally funded demonstration, is to measure and see, does this approach to managing parking really deliver the environmental benefits, and especially in terms of greenhouse gas emission reduction that we expect? And some of that's based on Dr. Shoup's research, and there's lots of evidence that suggests that will be the case. It's certainly the expectation, but one we're measuring very carefully.
Can you tell us a little bit about that research, Professor Shoup?
Well, yes, we have investigated here in Westwood Village, the little shopping district next to UCLA, how long it takes to find a curb parking space, and observing it over a year. And when the spaces were almost fully occupied all the time, and in this little 15-block area, it had amounted to 950,000 vehicle miles of travel just hunting for parking once people have got to the village. That's 4 trips to the moon, or 36 trips around the Earth. If you could eliminate all of that by nudging the price up so there are 1 or 2 vacant spaces on every block, there would be huge environmental benefits. But I can sympathize with the caller from Potrero Hill that some cities have made the policy popular by showing some specific benefits for the neighborhood that gets the meters. And one of the newest ones is when the meters, you know, they have to communicate with Jay Primus with an immense amount of information and credit card validation and things like that. The newest ones communicate with Wi-Fi rather than cellular connections. And in Ventura, when they started this, they used the Wi-Fi and realized they had a lot of excess capacity. And you know, every metered street now, they have the Wi-Fi open for free to everybody on the street. So restaurants and coffee shops that had their own Wi-Fi for the customers just cancel it. And they put a sign in the window saying free Wi-Fi courtesy of the parking program. So I think if you showed every neighborhood that, you know, they're thinking of extending the new technology to, that, oh, by the way, if you want this, if you agree to have this, everybody on the block will get free Wi-Fi. And I think that would change a lot of people's attitudes towards parking meters.
And I thank the caller and go to another email. And some anger here about Portrero Hill. Jay Primus, let me get a response from you. This listener, Elizabeth, writes, please ask Jay Primus why he refuses to cooperate fairly with the Portrero Hill neighborhood. His platitudes about cooperation are pathetic. We have watched meters pop up overnight after he's told us otherwise. Merchants on the Hill are furious. Residents are furious. Our representatives are furious. When will it end? This puff piece in the New York Times the other day was full of misstatements and outright lies. Just because the city got a multi-million-dollar grant doesn't mean that it should go to meters that will make business and residents leave the city. So unfair. I've lived on Portrero Hill for more than 15 years, and though I love it, I will consider leaving if I can no longer park in front of my own home.
Wow. Well, what's happening in Petrero Hill is that a lot of folks are conflating and confusing SF Park as a demonstration in these eight pilot areas that we're talking about today with a separate SFMTA proposal to better manage parking in Petrero Hill, an area that's dynamic, commercial. Imagine 18th Street. But for whatever historical reason, doesn't have any parking management. So there's a separate proposal to add meters in that area as a tool. And we had talked about doing those if we were going to use meters to manage parking. Why not have them included as part of SF Park, trying to have it be as smart as possible? That's something that the community said they didn't want to be part of this demonstration, and that's something we've listened to.
I just want to get in another comment here because we're coming to the end of the program. Someone wrote on the web, I'm always amazed that San Francisco seems to have more disabled drivers who park free than anywhere else I've been in my life. I can take you on a walk around where I work, Embarcadero up to Chinatown, show you blocks where over 50% are taken up by cars with disabled placards. Hard to believe. Any comment from either?
Yeah, is that from
Jay? I think that's from a listener on the web. Yeah.
All right. Well, no doubt, disabled parking or accessible parking is a huge issue for us, and there certainly is a lot of use and abuse of that. And at the same time, the real goal of providing good access for people who can't get around so well is really critical. It's something that we're working on this year, and what it could mean is changes at the local level, but it's a lot of that is defined by state law. So over the next year, the MTA is going to be working on that with other cities to try to find a better solution.
Well, good luck with finding better solutions across the board, and good luck with the program that you've instituted. Jay Primus, again, is program manager of SF Park, a project of San Francisco Municipal Transportation Agency. We thank him for being with us. We also thank Donald Shoup, who is a fellow of the American Institute of Certified Planners and professor of urban planning at UCLA, author of The High Cost of Free Parking. We'll continue to watch this story. It's been 2 years in the works and ongoing experiment. We thank you for being part of this morning's program. We would not be here without you and appreciate your listenership. We also want to thank Senior Editor Dan Zoll and our producers, Judy Campbell, Tina Lauerberg. Our engineer is Danny Bringer, and our executive producer is Raul Ramirez. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.